Carolina, and I had never met him before. And they told me, they said, you're going to have to introduce the speaker. I said, how can I introduce someone I've never met? So Dennis came down and met with me, and he wouldn't tell me anything. He says, that's part of my talk. But I do know this. I found out enough about him and talking to him to know that he's got over 20 years sobriety. And that he evidently has a good program. He evidently loves this program, or he wouldn't be here on this podium with us tonight. And I'm going to let him tell his story the way he wants to tell it. And I'm going to sit down and we're going to get going on this meet. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dennis Nance, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 1st of 1981, and my home group is the Queen City Group in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I'd like to thank Randy and Dan for and the committee for inviting me down, and I'd like to thank Libra for coming down with me, my wife. I'd like for you to meet my wife, Libra. That's one of the credentials of Alcoholics Anonymous. You need your own jail record, your own wife, your own alcoholic car, and your own probation officer. But anyway, my job is simple. We've had a good roster of speakers, and I've always liked the Georgia enthusiasm of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I like it. I guess I'm where I'm supposed to be on a good old October, dreary, liquor-drinking Georgia Saturday night. That's where I'm supposed to be. You know, I better tell you now about some of my nasty old opinions. You know I got some. You stay sober long enough to buy a cheap suit of clothes, you get your opinion. And so I'm not supposed to share my opinions, but, you know, it's hard to do, share my experience, strength, and hope without sharing my opinions. And you know, if you got a home group and a sponsor, big book, and you're trying to work the steps, been sober a while, and you're 6'4" and weigh 262 pounds, you can have an opinion if you want it. You don't get to come back a lot, you know. But you get to keep your opinion. One of my opinions is I believe that I'm sober by the grace of a loving God who manifests himself in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a continuously growing circle of friends like yourself. I am one that believes that there is a distinct difference between the program and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got here, the old guys, and I hated them. They said a lot of stuff that I didn't understand, but I remembered it. And one of the things they used to say is, boy, the fellowship will get you dry, but it's the program that gets you sober. I had no idea what they were talking about. I found that to be true. But I didn't get here because I was looking for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thought maybe you guys might be looking for me. But I didn't like being here. And when I got here, everybody looked so old. 40 and 50 years old. Some of these guys were 60. I didn't know they made liquor back then, you know. You know, I thought maybe I considered myself to be the best of everything, best in anything, and I just hated it that I didn't have 30 years of sobriety like everybody else. And I hated these old timers. They'd get to the meeting first, grab the seats that I like, the ones in the back. Back then in North Carolina, we had some bad-looking meeting places. Had that worn-out halfway house furniture in the back that, you know, originally some nice family bought that for living room furniture. They buy more furniture, moved it, found its way to the den, then they buy some more furniture. It find its way to the front porch. And then they buy some more furniture, they give it to the halfway house. It find its way in the Alcoholics Anonymous. You sit out in that furniture, and it looks so good. You sit down, you sink down another foot, you know. I wanted to sit back there. And these guys had been sober so long that you could tell when one was missing. You know, that furniture was against the wall, and they had little brown spots where the grease had come out of the hair on the wall. You could tell when one was missing, you know. Say, old Charlie's spot's showing tonight. He must not be here, you know. And most of them had those one-syllable names like Slick, Dick, Sam, Norm. You know. These boys must have bad memories, you know. These guys were serene. They had something about it, about them that I liked. They didn't seem to be worried about things that I was worried about. And these guys were so serene that when the meeting started, they'd start nodding off, going to sleep, one by one. By the time you read the tradition, some of them were snoring out loud. And they'd appear to be asleep until I said something dumb, and all of them would wake up at the same time. They start asking all those questions that they already knew the answer to. Ones I didn't like the answer, like, boy, who told you that? Well, I was smart when I got here. As a matter of fact, I was a borderline genius. Nobody had to tell me anything. I just know stuff sometimes. I understand cyberspace. I've been getting information from there for years. You know. I just walk along and all of a sudden I know stuff. Well, if you couldn't answer that question, they'd ask you question number two. Boy, can you find that in the big book? Well, I didn't have a big book. You don't need a big book unless you plan on staying sober. Then, you know, question number three. Who's your sponsor? I don't have a sponsor. Why would I purposely, knowingly go out and find somebody to tell me what to do? I don't like being told what to do. Besides, I've got a wife. She tells me what to do. And by this time, I'm getting all the help I need. Got a couple of judges and bosses. Everybody wants to give me a little help. Well, these guys had a spokesman. You know, these guys knew everything. They had answers that I had never heard before. I'd say, well, how many nights a week do I have to go to these meetings? They'd say, how many nights a week did you drink? I'd say, well, you know, I think these guys, maybe they're some of the philosophers. Maybe Jesus. Maybe they answer questions with questions. I'd say, well, how long do I got to go to these meetings? They'd say, you go until you want to go. I said, I caught them. I said, now, if I go until I want to go, I want to go all the time. They said, boy, that's the idea. And one night, you know, we get in the corner, we complain about them, we talk about them sometimes. Talk about how they hurt our feelings. And then we complain about our wives. Complain about our bosses. Complain about the highway patrol. Complain about the lawyers and this night, we were complaining about the highway patrol picking on us, stopping us for drunk driving. And this guy said something brilliant. Got my attention. I thought that was the smartest guy in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. We're complaining about drunk driving. And he said, boy, I hadn't been charged with drunk driving since I quit drinking. Man, that is profound. I had never correlated the two. I just thought I was having a bad day and people treated me bad. Just making life difficult for me. But I took a little inventory. I said, you know, every time I got caught driving drunk, I was drinking. So I believe that old boy's on the sun. And they had one smart aleck, A.D. A.D. became a big part of my life later on, but A.D. had big ears. Wore bib overalls sometimes. Walked fast, like he was going somewhere. He was retired. Came up to one night, Wednesday night, said, boy, we've diagnosed your problem. I said, yeah. You know, I knew I was special. I knew that his next statement would be, you know what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, they finally realize that I'm young, gifted, and black, and they are jealous of me, you know. But his next statement was, boy, you seem to be suffering from malnutrition between the ears. I remember him saying, you need some soul food. I said, man, what is he talking about? Well, about 2 weeks later, see, I didn't go through treatment, so I didn't get to taper off alcohol on Librium and all this other good stuff they use these days. About 2 weeks later, I'm sitting there thinking about OAD. I said, that guy called me stupid. I called my buddy Ivy up. I said, Ivy, AD called me stupid. He said, Dennis, that was 2 weeks ago. I said, well, it took me a little time. You see, A.D. realized something that I hadn't realized. A.D. could see. I realized now he wasn't calling me stupid. See, I'd reached that point in my illness where the only way I could feel good is by taking the very thing that made me feel bad. And the only way I thought I could solve my problem is by picking up another fifth of the problem. And I was on the merry-go-round of alcoholism. And everybody could see it but me. See, that's the primary reason why I need Alcoholics Anonymous today. That's why I need a home group. That's why I need a sponsor. That's why I need a proven program of action that will address my illness specifically. Because I can't seem to see Dennis Nance as he really is. That night, these old guys did the most loving thing, one of the most loving things that can be done to an alcoholic. They outlined a program of action for me. And back then, they just didn't tell you don't drink and go to meetings. They said they tell you don't drink and tell you exactly what meetings to go to. Oh, you know why. You know why. Sleeping on the back row of those meetings, too. Harassing people. But they sent me to speaker meetings. Only allowed me to go to one discussion meeting a week. And that was a step study meeting. I was instructed not to say anything to anybody. They didn't want anybody to know that they knew me yet. I began to go to these meetings, and it's like life began to open up again. Now, I didn't know anything about these steps, do anything about sponsorship, but I began to hear what I needed to hear the most. I begin to hear what I need to hear today. I begin to hear the onset, the problem, and most importantly, the solution. That's what I need to hear most today. That's why I come to meetings today, because I need to hear the onset, the problem, and the solution. Now, I didn't know anything about sponsorship, know anything about the steps. If I read anything out of the big book, I couldn't remember it. But I knew that I had behaved like you behave, I had drank like you drank, and I had liked like you act, I had thought like you thought, and I know I belonged in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I began to recall some, because I hadn't thought about it in years, some of what I'm going to share with you tonight. I was born in cotton on a cotton farm in Shelby, North Carolina, and You know, I don't know whether cotton has anything to do with alcoholism or not, but it don't help one bit. You know what I'm talking about? And I've always felt a little different. I'm surrounded by all these girls, you know. I had five sisters, and my brother hadn't come along yet. And I had three of these sisters before my brother came along. And my mother didn't have any brothers, so I didn't have any uncles on that side of the family. And Mom just thought I was special. Mom's cute little gingerbread boy. Yeah. He's special. Dad came from a long line of 6'7", 6'8" drunks. I mean, just Daddy was the shortest, and he was 6'3". And these guys were just real men. And Dad was the baby, and he was not impressed with me at all, you know. He'd often ask me, boy, are you ever going to be any accountant? I never answered that question, because I didn't intend to, you know. And life started for me. I began to have problems right off the bat. And first of all, I was embarrassed about before, because I remember being embarrassed about being raised on that cotton farm. Now, everybody had cotton back then, if you lived in Cleveland County, North Carolina. But then I had all these sisters. Didn't know what to do with all these sisters. And they used to just mess with me. And I know now they loved me. They loved me. I just never knew how to let anybody love me. You know, I was pretty dumb, too. You know, they did special stuff. They wore these nice little pastel dresses on Sunday. And they painted their fingernails. And they played with baby dolls. And I'm standing there looking at them. I didn't know what to do, you know. I'd be standing there while they're painting their nails on Saturday night. And I'd say, well, Dennis, boys don't paint their fingernails. I said, I realize that. They say, well, they do paint their thumbnails. They do it too, you know. I get to Sunday school, and I'm the only kid there, only boy with red thumbnails. So I got to eat that stuff off, you know. I'm just a bundle of nerves. Another thing that happened is I started wearing glasses when I was 5 years old. I realize now that I have a weak muscle in my left eye. You know, sometimes I look up, it look back down. And I look over here, look over there, you know. That eye used to be the first thing that got drunk on me when I was drinking. It caused me a lot of problems, you know. And I had no idea why I was wearing these glasses until I was in the first grade. And, you know, I realize now I still couldn't see those welfare glasses, those old brown kind with the hook handles. And then they had the loose hinges, you know, they sit on your head sideways, you know. And I had no idea. I was just wearing my glasses, the only kid in the first grade with glasses on. And one day I'm sitting there, and Albert Ray Chambers looks over the table and says, do that again. I said, what? I had no idea. My eyes looked at him, and I had to quit drinking in bars because of that eye. You know, I'd be sitting there drinking at the bar, and it's usually some short guy about 4'11", sitting on the other end. I always want to fight. I'm sitting there, and about the time I get good and talked on that wine, he'd say, what you looking at? I didn't. How am I going to answer that? So I figured the best thing to do is give me a little Thunderbird and go on home, you know. Life was good back then. I'm grateful now that I was raised in the church. Dad was superintendent of Sunday school, and I just told him, Dad's 6'3" and had long arms and fat fingers. I mean, he controlled that whole Sunday school. I don't remember missing but two Sundays in church from the time I can first remember to the time I went in the Army. And I believe that the same principles that you're teaching me today are the principles that Dad attempted to teach me on the front row of Sunday school. But I couldn't learn them then. I didn't have the desperation I had when I came here. And I believe I sat in Sunday school and began to perfect the very character defects that would keep me consumed by my illness for years. The first thing I learned to do is manipulate people. I learned how to act like you wanted me to act, say what you wanted me to say, until you quit looking. Then I did what I wanted to do. Of course, I got caught, and I got thumped. Now, Daddy could thump you into a coma. It's like, you know, like coming out of a blackout, you know. put the story together. Yeah, I believe he did it again. Another thing I learned to do is to memorize stuff. I could memorize Bible lessons, memorize Bible verses, spout that stuff off, and they'd say, "Elders, you've got a fine son." I'd say, tell him again. Yeah. Those are probably my worst two liabilities today. You know, it doesn't take long to memorize parts of the big book, parts of the 12 and 12, parts of other literature. If you don't believe it, go to your regular discussion meeting. Listen well and see if they're quoting the same page every Friday night. But you know the problem with this is it doesn't say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly memorized our book. It's follow the path. See, I just never want to do anything. I'm naturally lazy, not just physically lazy, but mentally and emotionally lazy, ultimately spiritually lazy. Because I wanted so much what you had when I got here. I wanted what I saw. But I didn't want to work to get it. Cleveland County back then, I think things were more integrated back then than they are now. Back then, that was before integration, and we realized that we just went to different churches. Some of us went to the same church. Some of us attended church together. But the big deal was we went to different schools, went to separate schools. But I guarantee you this, we went to the same cotton field, played in the same yard, rode on the pickup truck to the same store. And man, we had a lot of fun. But in 1978, the schools were integrated, around 67, 68, the schools were integrated. And my life began to change. I was in the eighth grade. Had no idea I could play basketball. I was just having fun, you know. And the coaches had begun to look at me. That next year, we'd be going to a fully integrated high school. And I began to wonder how I was going to handle. See, the racial climate was, I was concerned about how I'd act with my white friends, who I had known all my life, and not be rejected by my black friends and vice versa. But the big thing that happened that year is we had a farewell school party there in the eighth grade. And I began to know that I was different, even from other black people. Because the first thing I realized is that I could not dance. Up until that point, I didn't have to, you know. Never had the need to. And then I couldn't talk to the girls. And the music was strange. These guys were listening to stuff like Gladys Knight, Martha Reeves, and the Vandellas, the Temptations. And you know, I've been laying in the bathtub on Saturday night listening to a country music station out of Gaffney, South Carolina. I've been listening to stuff like Conway Twitty and the Twitty Birds, Merle Haggard and the Strangers, Buck Owens and the Buckaroos, you know. I didn't know a soul brother was supposed to listen to soul music. And the rest of the black guys had cool walks. They dipped a little bit when they walked. I didn't do that. I had been pulling that cotton sack, and that cotton sack took the dip out of my hip. So, I'm 13 years old, and I'm having my first major crisis. I'm a soul brother, and I don't have soul. I'm black, and I'm not cool. But now that summer, we found something to do the trick. My best friend and I, Kale. Kale's my best friend for a long time. That's because Kale listens slower than I talk. Kept him in trouble most of his life. But we laid out in the backyard after playing some basketball to cool off. Then we went to the corn crib, laid up in the corn crib, and we found some of Kale's grandfather's old crow. And man, we knew a little bit about the democratic process. And we voted majority rule. We drank Grandpa's liquor. 5 minutes after that, life began to change. I got that tingling sensation in my kneecaps. Man, I had never felt that before. And here I'm standing right in the middle of my Chuck Taylor Converses having my first spiritual awakening. And you know, I could feel those old welfare glasses just straighten up. Told Kel, I said, Kel, I think I got that 20/20 vision. I'm seeing to everything now. You know, just being two little mischievous country boys, we hid under the plum bushes between the house and the church. We sat there and we discussed what we'd do with girls and what we'd do to these girls if they came along. If they didn't come along, we didn't get to do it. And I'm grateful for that because I realize now I didn't know how to do it. But you know, before that day was over, I knew I had to have some more of that stuff. I didn't know where I was going to get it, but I knew I had to have it. Later on that summer, I woke up. We had moved off the farm by then. Had a cherry tree, a wild cherry tree in the backyard. And I woke up that morning, and I got a little information from cyberspace. I just knew some stuff. I knew how to make wine that morning. Never had made any before, never had thought about it. But you know, I'm like that. I just got this information, so I said, it's time to do something. I act on this information. I made me some wine, boiled it up, and terrorized my sisters so they wouldn't tell it. And I knew this stuff was supposed to ferment. And I knew it wouldn't ferment in the daylight. It had to be dark. Because alcohol won't get in it while you're looking. And I poured this stuff up in two mason jars, dug a hole in the backyard, covered it up. I sat on the back porch for about 5 minutes. Got to be ready. Dug one up and drank it. I was disappointed. I couldn't figure out how the alcohol got in. Later on, I poured a little rubbing alcohol to get it started, you know. That three-day process never produced a high. It did produce the worst case of gas I ever had in my life. I began my freshman year of high school unknowingly already having lit the fire of alcoholism. I'm one of those guys that just genuinely cannot drink. My 4 years of high school were somewhat of a blur. I drank myself out of the athletic program in 2 years, off a school bus route in a year and 19 days. I entered high school on a college preparatory track, drank myself from there down to a vocational track, to a general track, and barely got out of high school. Laying out of school, drinking wine, joyriding. You know, I had two sisters who were both skipped a grade in school. And the teachers were looking at me. Back then, teachers really took an interest in me. And they were always looking at me, wondering what's wrong with Dennis. Well, you know, I just never had such a desire to follow instructions. My last 2 weeks of high school, I was confronted with my drinking 4 times. The first of those times was by an English teacher, Lois Sowers. Threw me out of class for some mischief that I had done. Came out in the hallway with that big black book and said, Dennis, this is your attendance record. This is some work that you've done. You're actually doing worse work now than you did as a freshman. Said, Dennis, I think you have a drinking problem. I'm saying, you know, what do teachers know? You drink one beer, and they think you have a drinking problem. So I just discounted that. But the next 3 people that said anything about my drinking were 17 years old, just like me. The first of those was Sylvia. Had Sylvia doing my history homework. One day, I reported to class, and she said, Dennis, I think you're an alcoholic. Now, that hurt my feelings. There's a difference between having a drinking problem and being an alcoholic. Didn't want to be an alcoholic. Later, there was Linda Lowe, who actually penned in my annual, Dennis, you're a nice guy. Stay off the booze, and everything will be okay. Man, that's pretty heavy stuff for 17 years old. Then there was Janice Morgan, who also penned in Miami. Dennis, someday reality will hit you in the face and you won't know what to do. Man, that's powerful stuff. I'm 17 years old. I drank for 10 more years. I often say that the illness of addiction is like having body odor. When the guy that's stinking finds out, everybody else has known for a long time. It took me 10 more years of drinking to see myself like they saw me. And see, that's why I need Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I need a sponsor. That's why I need a home group. That's why I need to be surrounded by people who love me enough to tell me the truth. I can't seem to see myself as I really am. Leaving high school, Lee and I had grown up together, and we always just figured we'd marry. But not doing anything else, I figured it was time to get patriotic, because I just couldn't live in my father's house and do the stuff that I was doing. And back then, my parents had begun to close in and love me. They wanted me to do stuff like go to a vocational school, come in at a reasonable hour, go visit Lieber and quit crawling in the wet bathroom window drunk. That's all they wanted. All they wanted to give me was the things that any responsible parent would give their child. And I hated it, and I said, well, you know, I'll join the Army. Because they'd always told me I'd never be able to get in the Army because my eyes were so bad. But their recruiter said I had the best pair of eyes he had seen that day. I was in the Army a day later. But I wanted to hurt my parents' feelings so bad that I went home one final time to hurt their feelings. And Dad sat on the front porch with his bib overalls on like he usually did, smoking my cigarettes. I said, Dad, I joined the Army, thinking it would hurt his feelings. He said, boy, that's good. You're not doing anything else. Go tell your mom. Dad had the kind of spiritual life that old timers have in this program. They won't rescue you from your pain, you know. So I told Mom, Mama joined the Army. Mom did just what I thought she'd do. She started crying and hollering and rolling all over that bed. Man, finally got her back, teaching to mess with me. I went in my bedroom, sat on the edge of the bed and listened to her. Yes, indeed. Won that one, you know. 4 weeks later, I was down at Fort Jackson crying and hollering, rolling all over my bed. I did well in the Army. I stayed 8 years of active duty and did well. As a matter of fact, going in the Army, I didn't know it, but Lieber was pregnant with our son who was born when I was in Vietnam. And I only had to do half of a tour in Vietnam. Lieber and I got married on the way back and went out to Oklahoma and began to do unknowingly what alcoholic families do. Chase that paycheck. Constant arguments. Fights. Throwing things. I tell you, it's amazing what a man will have to go through just to drink a little wine, you know? I can honestly say I embarrassed myself out of every assignment the Army ever gave me. They love my family. They love my kids. But nobody ever knew Dennis Nance. Coming back from Vietnam, I went into the nuclear surety program and began to train for a nuclear weapons artillery gun chief. After a short time in the States, Lieberman, the family, all of us went to Germany. Before going to Germany, I probably would have never been debit for Germany, except I began to acquire drinking infractions of the law. And you can't be in nuclear weapons and be an alcoholic. So I was reassigned to Germany to avoid being prosecuted for that drinking infraction. In Germany, I spent 40 months in Germany on the Czechoslovakian border in a cav unit and began to accumulate 3 more infractions of the law. One of these I was fined and given an Article 15, fined $50 to keep German authorities from prosecuting. Now, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and people began to ask me, had I ever been convicted of a drinking-related infraction of the law, my answer was no, because I had never been convicted. And my way of thinking is, if I was not convicted, then I didn't do it. You know. See, that's why I need Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I need a sponsor. That's why I need a home group. I need people close enough to help me see the truth. I can't seem to see the truth by myself. Coming back to the States, I was selected for drill sergeant school, went out to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and harassed people for 2 more years. And after that, I was in so much trouble. I think if I had stayed another day in the Army, I would have ended up in jail. They levied me for the career to career just to get rid of me. I know that. You know, I think drunks have a sixth sense. At least I do. I just know instinctively when people are trying to get rid of me, you know. And Libra loved it. By this time, Libra's thinking divorce. So I'm up for 2 discharges at the same time. One from the Army, one from my wife, you know. Bought Libra back to North Carolina and went back out to Oklahoma to do my last 45 days in the Army. Man, I felt so good going back to Oklahoma. I had 45 days. I could drink with authority. I could drink like I wanted to drink. I'm just a good old North Carolina wino. I like Thunderbird. I like Night Train. I like Mogan David. Yeah, that's in there. And my eyes just got red thinking about how good it was going to be getting back. I got out there and people started coming to visit me. First guy to come to visit me was the guy that cut the electricity off. Then the old water guy comes along and the natural gas man. It got so bad I had to move on post. A kind gentleman kept that house from going into foreclosure. And I salvaged $4,100 out of a $21,000 house. Sent Libra $1,300 of that money. And woke up out of a blackout in Hobart, Oklahoma. I have no idea where the rest of that money went. And see, I didn't know anything about blackouts. That was a source of guilt for many years for me. And it was a source for many a fight in our household until Libra and I had made some progress in AA and Al-Anon, respectively. And I came back to North Carolina like a good drunk's supposed to, drinking wine and writing bad checks. They just, string of bad checks, just followed me right on into North Carolina. Got here and Libra couldn't understand where the money was, and I couldn't either. She said, well, that's okay, I'm leaving you. I've got a house in Greensboro. And Sunday afternoon, she got in that car and she drove to Greensboro. I got in the other car and followed her. You know, if you're going to leave me, I'm going to see you do it. Libra got a job that same week. I applied for 1 job a day. If I was not hired, my next stop was a liquor store on Church Street. I didn't have time to be begging people for jobs. I'm a businessman. Drank for 2 more years like that. I was eventually hired at a local prison unit, McLeansville Prison Unit, a mental health satellite, a diagnostic unit. There were people in that prison so crazy they didn't know what they were in prison for. And I started getting promoted. I came in smelling like alcohol on first shift. Sergeant Williams said, Nance, 6 o'clock in the morning, you're already smelling like liquor. Put me on second shift. Did me a favor. That way I had time to sober up before I got to work. But the problem is, I got off at 10 o'clock. I mean, what rational drunk is going to go home at 10 o'clock when he's already out of the house? Keep going, man. I keep going. Well, eventually I got promoted to third shift. That's where I wanted to be. That way I could work all night, drink all day, and maximize my time, you know, not waste any time. And I didn't know it, but you know, if you start drinking around the clock like that, or at least me, I started seeing things that nobody else could see. So now I'm getting a little video with this extra information I'm getting. Start seeing little fuzzy things, you know, they come out the side and they go behind me, but when I looked, you couldn't catch them, you know. So I start trying to get them in the trash can. You know, these inmates in this prison, started signing petitions and writing grievances trying to have me fired. Now, it was some time in Alcoholics Anonymous before I figured out that when you're so crazy that crazy though people don't want to be around you, you're in bad shape. Thanksgiving of 1980, we were invited home for Thanksgiving dinner. And I didn't know it, but my wife and my sisters and my mother had become concerned about my drinking. They were concerned about whatever happened to me in Vietnam that made me drink like that. And they had begun to explore some place that I could go to help me with my drinking. And they began to, we had a new minister at my home church then. They asked me about going to church. And back then, I hated anything spiritual. I had forgotten about that loving God I had been taught in Sunday school as a kid. It seems that as my addiction progressed, as my alcoholism increased, my spirituality just faded away. I became resentful of God. I believed that he did seemed to cut everybody else a good deal, just never done right by me. So I just cussed him out. Because if you want to win those arguments, you got to leave, so I did. And I woke up by my second recognizable blackout, headed north on 85. That night, I think I had that moment of clarity we hear a lot about in Alcoholics Anonymous. I begin to reflect back in 1976. Something had happened magnificently at home. Libra's uncle, Big Dan W., who was the town drunk then, had gotten sober in this strange thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody knew much about it. They just knew that Big Dan was gainfully employed. He had driver's license, courting heavy again. I said, maybe if I get back to Greensboro, I'll ask Dan about this thing called alcoholism. I got back to Greensboro and I said, well, don't need to ask him now. I can quit on my own. First miracle happened in my life. Dan called me. Dan came by. I said, well, Dan, make yourself at home. Don't tell drunks that. They'll do it. Dan took off his shoes, laid down on the couch. I'm cooking macaroni and cheese, thinking about how I'm going to feel when my wife and kids leave me, because I know she's not coming back this time. Went out to check my car, looked in Dan's car, and in the back of his car, he had an old faded out big book. And that little Toyota had a couple of pamphlets on alcoholism. And you could barely make out Alcoholics Anonymous. Looked like it had coffee stains or water. Just a bad looking big book. I know now he'd been using that book. I checked all of Dan's car doors. But I'd have stole that book if I'd have found one of those doors open. See, I have trouble asking for help. That's why I got to stay here this time. I went inside and made the biggest mistake I'd ever made in my life. I woke Dan up. I said, Dan, tell me about this thing called alcoholism. Dan talked for what seemed like 2 hours. Probably no longer than 5 minutes. And finally, he said, a $5 number, will you talk? I said, Big Dan, if you just shut up, I'll talk. I talked to a guy named James who wanted me in his office at 9 o'clock Monday morning. I went down there. James was a clean-cut black guy. Had on gray pants, a white shirt, and a blue tie. Had on gray socks, tan shoes. Man, I tell you, I didn't dress like that anymore. I didn't trust people who looked like that. James talked freely about his alcoholism. Gave me a little test. I passed the test. Don't know what it was about, but I was pretty good at taking tests. He talked so freely about his alcoholism, I began to wonder if I could trust this guy. I'm not telling him anything. I figured he worked for the local sheriff or something. Get me to talking and then throw me in the slammer. I wanted out of there bad. I was uncomfortable with anybody talking about themselves like that. Now, you see, I'll talk about you, but I'm not talking about me. No. Before I could get out of there, he said, Dennis, if you're going to stay sober, you're going to need this book. And that's what I wanted, that book, so I could go home, lay across my bed, read this book, and not have to come to meetings like you poor people. Because after all, I was not that bad. I just drank a little bit. And before I could get to the door, they asked me another question. Dennis, will your wife and your children come in for counseling? I knew they would. They've always made friends easily. They have always been uninhibited. So my thinking is, they've messed up my drinking, now they're going to mess up my not drinking. Get in here and tell them. I knew Lieber just wanted to tell them. And our kids were young then. I think they were like 5 and 7. I'm not sure. 5 and 7, they give or take 2 years. But you can't trust kids like that. They'll tell the truth if you're not careful. Lieber went to a couple of meetings, went right into Al-Anon. Life started changing around the house. She got a right smart mouth, you know. Saying stuff like, Dennis, I'm going to the Al-Anon meeting tonight. And if you want to go anywhere or AA, you can take the kids with you and make arrangements for them. You're the father. It's about time you do that. And my tactic was to engage, start the argument, get her all mad, jump in the car and leave before she did. So I cheap my first line. She wouldn't even respond. She'd just get in the car and leave. Come home sometime later. Dennis, I want to go to Bonnie Doon's. Well, what is Bonnie Doon's? Well, it's an Al-Anon retreat. How much does that cost? She'd tell me. I said, Lieber, we can't afford that. She said, I can't afford not to. Get in the car, leave. Wouldn't even discuss it. I'm losing my power here. So I start hanging around these AA meetings. I like the ones with the coffee pot and refreshments in the back. That way I could eat while y'all have the meeting. Had no idea what life was about. Didn't want to be here. But after about 2 weeks, I began to feel sorry for you guys. You seem to be powerless over alcohol and your life has become unmanageable. See, I'm powerless over the bill collectors. Powerless over my job. My wife won't leave me alone. I know the highway patrol is sitting up there waiting on me. Couldn't take step two, because it implied that at least my behavior might be insane, if not my thinking. Of course, I thought neither one. So I looked at step three, and it had God in it. Knew I couldn't take that one. So maybe I might start on step four. You know, I didn't get through skip through school like my sisters, so I skipped myself through Alcoholics Anonymous. And by that time, people are noticing me. You know, it's hard. And back, you know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had 4 good pair of pants. I had 1 bright yellow pair, 100% polyester, of course. Had a pastel blue pair, a pink pair, and a red pair. And it's hard not to be noticed if you're 6'4" and wearing red pants. So they begin to notice me. Boy, have you got a sponsor? No, I don't have a sponsor. Next meet night, have you got a sponsor yet? Nope. So I had to change meetings. People began to rap. Lieber got concerned. Dennis, have you got a sponsor yet? Nope. You know, I think James B. would make a good sponsor for you. Well, James B. was 6'9", about 280 pounds. His afro weighed more than me. They can't sponsor. People that weren't even alcoholic began to get concerned about me getting a sponsor. So I said, that means that much to them. Maybe I'll try to find one. So I started looking around for sponsorship. Started having trouble, though. I couldn't find anybody black enough. Couldn't find anybody cool enough. Couldn't find a Vietnam veteran who had been married 9.5 years with 2.5 kids. Couldn't find anybody with O positive blood. Couldn't find anybody with the right curves in their fingerprints. So I had to do the only logical thing a smart guy like me would do. I had to sponsor myself for a while. Easiest time I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was sponsoring myself. I didn't have to go to meetings unless I wanted to. Put down that big book and started reading stuff like Esquire, GQ, Essence Magazine. Life is good when you sponsor yourself. Didn't need an answering machine back then. People don't call when you sponsor yourself. I stayed sober 81 days sponsoring myself. Done a good job. Sitting in the East Side meeting, and all of a sudden, right out of cyberspace, I get new info. Boom! Said, look, Big D, you're alcoholic. You can't drink. Maybe some other stuff you can use. I said, tell me more. So here I'm making the decision to start using some alternate substances. I said, wait a minute, you don't make a decision like that. I've been around AA that long. I need to talk to my sponsor about that. Yes, I had internal sponsorship. Never have arguments, never have a disagreement. Oh, I long for the days when my sponsor and I used to sit in the same seat, not just the same seat. Well, needless to say, me and my sponsor ended up in Rutherford County, drunk and naked, you know. February 1st of 1981, I've done the only thing I know I've done right in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came back. Those old guys were still sitting on their grease spots back there. You know what they said? The boy, we've been waiting on you. And that night they had a meeting after the meeting. Invited me to the meeting. After I got there, I realized I was the subject of the meeting. You know what I mean? Man, they asked me some pretty heavy stuff that night. James just asked me right out about prayer and meditation. Boy, did you pray the day that you drank? I said, no. That was the first time I had told the truth in a long time. It felt so good. I didn't have to worry about what lie I was going to tell to cover up that lie, to cover up that lie, to cover up the next lie. And he said, boy, it's evident to me that you can't keep yourself sober. How do you expect to stay sober if you don't use this program and the people that God has surrounded you with? They talked to me that night in the language that I understand. I went that home that night with the basis of my recovery. I woke up this morning with the same ideas. I've known since that night, and I knew this morning. But Dennis Nance can't drink. Dennis Nance cannot replace his alcohol with any other mood-altering chemical. I know that Dennis Nance can't keep Dennis Nance open. I know that Dennis Nance is going to have to effect and maintain a relationship with God as he understands him or as he misunderstands him. And I know that Dennis Nance has to maintain active sponsorship from someone who is successful in living sober a day at a time. That night I went home and prayed my first sincere prayer. I went in the bathroom, closed the door, ran some water in the sink, flushed the commode, turned on the shower, got on the side of that bathtub and said, God, thank you for keeping me sober. Cut all that water off, went to bed. Didn't want anybody to know I was praying. It ain't cool to pray, you know. After about 6 months of that stuff, I began to pray for the courage to pray in my bedroom. Libra was attending Al-Anon actively at that time. She came home one night, seemed to be disgusted. Just walked in and said, Dennis, I've been telling my sponsor I'm going to do something, and I hadn't been doing it, and I'm going to start doing it tonight. Well, you know, I wanted to see what that was. I thought maybe she had a little new negligee back in bed. Went back there, and she was on the side of that bed praying. And since that night, we've been able to start our days of prayer and meditation, end our days of prayer and meditation. Sometimes separately, sometimes together, but it's not a big deal. Our kids just seem to gravitate right into Alateen. And I know the power of Alateen, Al-Anon, and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have been blessed to have benefited from all three. I saw those kids go from two nail-biting discipline problems in school to fairly good students. My son is lazy just like his father is, did just enough to get by. Michelle became an honor roll student. And although she was expelled from the school bus most of the time, went to college later on an academic scholarship. Man, life has changed tremendously. Primarily because I ran into people that insisted that I work the steps. They insisted that I take these steps. See, these old guys didn't give me a chance to pick my first sponsor. They issued me one. They gave me Ivy. Ivy was unemployed, unemployable, been married two times, divorced two times, living with his mother, and his last drunk was on wintergreen alcohol. As soon as I got loose from this guy, I went back and told Slick, I said, Slick, that guy's crazy. He can't be my sponsor. They said, you crazy. That's why you got him, you know. When Ivy was satisfied that I had taken step three, and back then, these guys had me, they prayed the third step prayer with me on my knees. And some time ago, I started doing that with the people I sponsor. Then he sent me to Lou. Lou insisted that I take steps four through nine, and when he was satisfied that I had taken steps four through nine, he sent me to AD. A.D. has never been satisfied with anything. A.D. made me take those steps again. And A.D. taught me what he knew of the Big Book in his living room on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock. I'd complain about my wife. A.D. would take me on a tour of his two-bedroom apartment. In every room, he'd open the door and say, boy, you see anybody in there? I said, no. Go to the book. Anybody in there? Don't see anybody in there. Tough living by yourself. Let's talk about the book, man. A.D. showed me how he opened his day and how he ended his day with prayer and meditation. A.D. showed me how he did his 10th step inventory. And A.D. showed me that, and he prayed aloud. And here's old Baptist boy, spent his whole life in the church. And it was in Alcoholics Anonymous, where I was not just told to pray, but I was shown how to pray. See, I've spent my whole life looking for God in burning bushes and resounding voices. God came to me in the most effective way come to this drunk. Came to me in the form of another alcoholic bearing the message of hope. AD's dead now, but I can still hear him saying, boy, if you stay sober, you're going to help a lot of people. If you stay sober, you're going to sponsor people. And if you can't sponsor people like you were sponsored, if you can't teach them the book like you were taught the book, if you don't insist that they take the steps like you were taught to take the steps, then you get them to somebody who can. Because you may be cheating them out of the only chance at recovery they'll ever have. And you know, the time has come several times when I've had to do just that. You know, life began to change. Those kids got up, drove, grew up, went to college, got out of my house. Dennis started working at UPS. Michelle went to college and just never came back. Didn't bother me a bit. I got my wife back, you know. And I learned how to treat. I think my wife and I learned how to love each other in Alcoholics Anonymous by allowing you to love us. We had forgotten how to treat people when we got here. We had forgotten how people act when they love each other. And we learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I tell you, the joy of my life now is just living from day to day. I have friends all over the world. I have a home group that misses me when I'm not there. They ask. As a matter of fact, I've gotten so good now, I just tell them before I leave. So I don't get interrogated when I get back. I've got a sponsor that knows where I am tonight. got a meaningful job. All those opportunities I messed up for education, sobriety created, and I thank God, gave me the opportunity to go back to school and not only complete my undergrad, but to complete a graduate degree. And man, I'll tell you, that doesn't happen to everybody. But I think that Dennis Nance is one of those people that God is not going to allow just to sit and waste the gift of sobriety. I think God is going to require that I do something with that and pass it on. Well, you know, another joy of my life is my grandchildren. My son has been married, he's divorced, has two granddaughters. Man, I learned a lot from them. Naomi will tell you, without asking, I look like my grandmother. No problem. I learned a lot from Naomi. Naomi keeps life simple. We were in church one Easter, and Naomi back then used to sit on my left side because she thinks she's special. I think it is because I think she's special. One Easter, we go to church. She's on my left side playing with my Bible, my ink pen, crawling through my legs under the pew back up. And, you know, in good old Southern Baptist churches, we're a little lively. The preacher's reaching the climax of his sermon, beginning to yell a little bit. And Naomi stops and starts listening. So, yeah, I got her attention now, and I don't have to worry about this. And they always ask you the embarrassing questions out loud. Papa, is God coming today? I said, I'm not sure. I don't think so. You know what she did? She started right back playing. You know, if he's not coming today, I'm going to go ahead and get the fun out of this. You know? Then there's cute little Inez. Inez is left-handed. She's got a question every minute. Wonder where she gets that from. Talks all the time. Inez, how'd you learn that? I just know. I said, well, I understand that. And then our new addition to the family is Michelle. I don't know whether her and Lorenzo will ever get married or not, but got a cute little grandson. Looks like me. I think he'll be 12 months old, but he started walking early. I like this guy. He likes me. Can't change his diaper because as soon as you get it off, he runs. And you know who he runs to. Runs to Pawpaw. Wipe his nose. When he gets away, he's coming to me. And he gets over there and he'll sit back and look at him. So, yeah. Amazingly, I don't know why, but we're close. I like the way this guy approaches life. He looks at things. He examines things. And then he licks it. After a weekend, he's licked the oven door, the dishwasher, all the storm doors, big screen television. I would have missed all that were it not for you. 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous has literally changed my life. I would have never guessed that life would be like it is today. All the relationships that I had destroyed in the past have repaired themselves as a result of steps 8 and 9. The one I treasure the most is my mother. I remember my mother attending Alcoholics Anonymous meetings with me when we were still in Greensboro. And she came back and said, Dennis, I believe that's the way church ought to be. She said, and then we talked to her about 3 o'clock in the morning. And you know, when a 76-year-old black woman who has received everything she knows educationally and spiritually through the church, can say that she believes Alcoholics Anonymous is the way church ought to be. That's a compliment. I remember when I was being assigned to South Carolina, she said, boy, I want to talk to you when you come by here. So I went by there. She said, don't leave here without me talking to you. Usually mom is in the living room or the den, nosing in everybody's business. But this time she's in the back row. So I go back there. I said, Mom, you wanted to see me? She said, yeah. See, Mom was not sure they had Alcoholics Anonymous in South Carolina. And she said, boy, when you get down there, you get in touch with those people. I said, Mom can't say that I'm an alcoholic. She can't say Alcoholics Anonymous in the same sentence that my name is in. So I was going to make her say it. I said, Mom, what people are you talking about? And she takes her elbow and hits me upside the head. Boy, you know what people. Mom doesn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. She just knows that something has happened to her son. She knows she has her son back. She doesn't know anything about the mechanics or the miracles that we take for granted and see on a daily basis. All she knows is she has her son back. Not only does she thank you for that, but I thank you so much for that. May God bless you.